The impulse had become irresistible. There was only one answer to the fury that tortured him. And so he committed his first act of murder.
Who the fuck are you? I was only going to pay for it.
Please, come along with me to my office, will you?
Hello, Peter Neal speaking.
Not anxiety, fear, but freedom. You wrote those words, page 46. Freedom to strike again, Peter.
Listen, don't hang up.
Tenebrae is a sexist novel. Why do you despise women so much?
Sexist? No, I don't think it's sexist.
Women as victims, ciphers, the male heroes with their hairy, macho bullshit.
Come on.
You cheap little hooker. I wouldn't come near you right now if my life depended on it. You make me sick.
I drank too much. I'm going to throw up.
I was on my way back to the house. I know there's a piece of the puzzle there. If I can remember it, see it.
Oh, God. Please help me. The door was open and I was attacked by a creep.
Spy.
Hi, people. This is Johnny, Giovanni Lombardo Radice from Stage Fright, and you are listening to the Hysteria Continues.
And indeed you are. Welcome back to The Hysteria Continues, and we're heading again over to Rome, back to Roma for Dario Argento's seminal 1982 giallo slasher megamix, I kind of guess you could call it, Tenebrae. So we're quite excited to be doing this one. It's another of the listener picks. Joseph, who did we say this was from?
I believe this was picked by Michael Alishan.
Right. Well, thank you, Michael. It's nice to be. Well, we'll see if we all agree about that. This is a classic movie. We just to let you know ahead of the show, we are recording two shows today because some scheduling issues. So this will be a little bit a shorter one. We're going to be covering some feedback on our next episode, which we'll have in time for Halloween, and we'll tell you about that a little bit later. If you're a long time listener to the show, you've probably guessed what we're going to be covering for Halloween. But we are going to talk a little bit about what we've been watching recently. So, Joseph, do you want to go first? What have you been watching?
Yeah, I watched Tremors 5, which is the long delayed sequel to Tremors 4. And it's pretty much more of the same. It's it's fun, likable characters, some pretty decent effects for a direct-to-video kind of effort. But I don't know, it just these films don't really take any chances. They kind of play it safe. I mean, there's never really any sense of danger, despite, a large cast getting eaten alive by giant worms. None of the main characters are ever in any real danger, so it's just kind of familiarity, so kind of paint by numbers, but it was a decent one-time watch.
Okay, right. I've only actually seen the first Tremors, and I only watched that actually relatively recently. I've not seen it before, so I've not been big on the Tremors movies, but
Two are the best, okay. But after that, it's just kind of
What about you, Nathan and Eric? Are you Tremors fans?
I'm a big fan of the original. It's the only one I've seen, though. I haven't seen any of the sequels because they're all direct-to-video, which is kind of a red rag to a bull, really. So,
I'm kind of the same as both of you. I've only seen the first one.
Well, Tremors 2 was made with the intention of going to the theaters, but it ended up going to video. It's actually really good for a direct-to-video effort.
Cool. Okay. Anything else, Joseph?
Yeah, a couple more. I watched two films called Knock Knock. The first one is just a little 6-minute short film by the guys who did The Campground. This cable guy knocks on this guy's door. He's watching Night of the Living Dead, and he just harasses this guy. It's an interesting little short film made on no budget. It's basically not to spoil anything, but it's basically just kind of a semi-advertisement for their new movie called The Campground, The Requel, which is a remake of their original Campground, but also a sequel at the same time. So, interesting little short film. they let me watch it ahead of time, so I told them I'd mention it here. I recommend it for a 6-minute film. It's not bad. The other Knock Knock is the Eli Roth film, which really is a remake of Death Game, starring Sandra Locke and Colleen Camp, who both produce, and Colleen Camp has a cameo. And this one stars Keanu Reeves. The first 30 minutes, really good. Really good build-up. Really good acting. But boy, when it switches gears and gets into the meat of the story, it's kind of like a the Wicker Man remake in just absolute hilarity, just terrible acting, horrible dialogue, but definitely entertaining. I like The Green Inferno a little better out of his recent films, but this one's pretty entertaining, but kind of only in that so bad it's good variety, I'd say.
Cool. Okay. No, I've not. What about you, Nathan? Have you seen either of those?
No.
No.
I want to see the Eli Roth movie, but I haven't seen it yet.
No. Okay. Cool. I expect, Eric, you haven't seen them, have you?
No. Although Knock Knock did play here in the cinemas about 5 or 6 months ago, didn't it?
Did it?
It did, yeah. Briefly, but okay. It did.
Oh, right. I thought it was a new movie.
It is new, and I'm surprised. I think we got it ahead of the States, but I didn't go see it. I didn't get great reviews at the time.
No, fair enough. Okay. All right. Well, thanks, Joseph. Anything else, or is that...
Yeah, one more. I watched The Final Girls.
Oh, right.
Which
okay.
is basically about the... It's kind of like the Camp Days meets Last Action Hero. These teens go to see this old slasher film, and they end up trapped inside the movie. And I actually enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I would. I do, however, feel like it sells itself a little short, because it's rated PG-13, and if you're going to wallow in the cliches and the tropes of slasher films, I wouldn't recommend trying to appeal to a younger demographic. So there's really no gore, no nudity, and I could go either way on cursing. It's just kind of, it's definitely very, very well shot and very well acted, and it's a lot of fun, but it's one of those movies that I liked a lot, but yet that little tidbit just kind of nags at the back of my mind, like, what if they'd went balls to the wall? Then it really would have been a bona fide classic. But as it stands, it's just a fun movie that could have been more, I guess is what I'd say.
Okay. Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing that. Is that out on screens or is it on Netflix?
It's on video on demand.
Right. Okay. And Nathan, I know you've watched it, haven't you, recently?
Oh yes, I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. I agree with Joseph. There's particularly a scene in the film where the kids trapped in the movie know that if the slutty girl who's a character in the movie like flashes her boobs, then the killer is going to show up. So they make her wear like oven mitts and a life jacket. And when it's time to lure the killer out, she's like does a strip tease. And when she finally gets down to flash, like the camera pans up to her face and you don't see anything. And I was thinking, this was an 80s movie. They would have shown.
Yeah.
Because that's just how the 80s movies were. So yeah, it definitely, I think, would have fared even better rated R, but even PG-13, it's so much fun to watch. I mean, I don't want to spoil too much, so I'm not going to say too much, but it's just anybody that's seen slasher movies, when stuff comes up, you're going to recognize it from other movies. There's even one part where somebody mentions how amazing it is to smoke pot and have sex on a waterbed.
No way.
Yeah. I'm like, that has
a
to be
Pieces
right
reference.
From Pieces.
Yeah. Wow.
So... and it's got a lot of heart, more so than you would expect.
You were saying this about Sleepaway Camp 2. Remember, you were watching it and you were worried about the families who were affected.
I was under the influence at that time. I was not under the influence when I watched this one.
Okay. I gotta say, I really loved the bitchy girl character.
Yes.
I love her. I love her. She's like, it's halfway through the movie. I'm still alive. I think I've overstayed my welcome. I am the bitch.
I mean, it's just funny because the ones that are trapped in the movie, they know the trappings of a movie, but they're not snarky about it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's they just know that, you know, certain things are going to happen. And I don't know if you agree with me on this, Joseph, but I thought that as a whole, the cast was fairly likable. I like them.
Yeah, I mean, even the unlikable characters that were meant to be unlikable, they're actually likable. And I think the movie fares well because it's so outlandish. I think it fares well that they take the killer actually seriously. He's not goofy at all. He's actually kind of, you know, threatening in a Jason Voorhees kind of way. So I think it really works that way. You know, like I said, I call it a great movie. It really is a great movie, but it could have been, you know, like a true classic, but it's missing that little bit because of the rating and trying to appeal to that younger demographic who, you know, probably don't even watch these movies and don't understand the tropes that are involved with these films.
I thought that there was some good character development in the movie, like with the bitch for sure, and also like with the main girl, because, and this is not a spoiler because it's in the previews, but like the main girl of the film, her mom has passed away, and when she goes to see this movie, she's watching her mom as an actress in the film, and when she gets trapped in the film, she's sort of trapped in the film with her mother, but it's not really her mother. So, I mean, there's a lot of good character development between them, I thought. And, you know, I actually really cared about who was going to survive in the movie.
Yeah, so. definitely one of the best movies I've seen this year. Just that one tiny nitpick, and then I would have called it the best, but, you know, you can't win them all, I guess.
Cool. Okay, yeah. Well, that sounds like one to look forward to. So, thank you, Joseph. Nathan, as you talked about that, is there anything else you've been watching?
I watched the new film Gravy.
Okay.
Which is the movie about the cannibals who trap like all the employees of this Mexican restaurant after hours and basically want to kill them and cook and eat them. And I was a little concerned at first because I thought it was going to be like all these people tied to chairs, you know, because, you know, that's been done so many times, the whole, you know, they're all sitting in one spot getting tortured for the whole movie. And at first it did seem like it was going to go that route, but then it doesn't. It kind of like it goes in crazy directions. It's definitely a horror comedy with more emphasis on the comedy than the horror, in my opinion. It's very graphic, but I always get the sense that most of the characters never really grasp the how serious their situation is. I mean, there's the characters are so quirky. It's really funny because there's a scene where one of the characters gets knocked out, and when she wakes up, of course she sees so a lot of stuff that happened while she'd been knocked out, and she doesn't realize that one of the killers is standing on the bar next to her, and the killer says something like hello, and she looks up and sees the killer, and she's like, oh god. Like, she's just so annoyed that this killer's still alive. And then she reminds me of Justin, because when the killer's talking about how she's going to kill this person, the girl just grabs a bottle of liquor and starts chugging it.
That's so Justin.
Why would that remind you of me?
You like the sauce.
Yes, yeah. I'd like the sauce a little bit too much last night.
Because
so,
you're a goddamn wino. Yeah.
No, I drink also fine wine and vodka martinis. I think that was my mistake last night. Vodka martini and red wine does not mix.
There's a really funny scene where one of the girls tells the killer, because one of the girls, the cannibal girl's wearing a cat suit for the whole movie, and she's trying to be this badass, and one of the victims looks at her and says, you know, it's really hard to take you seriously with that humongous camel toe. and it actually hurts the killer's feelings, because she crosses her legs and she's like, you're not funny, you asshole. So, I mean, it's I really love the movie. I did, but I think it's one of those movies that's going to divide audiences. I think it's a love it or hate it kind of film.
Cool. Okay. Well, that sounds good. So again, is that on video on demand?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Okay.
I think it's out in Blu-ray from Scream Factory as well, isn't it?
Oh, is it? Okay.
Oh, I don't know.
So. I think so. I think they've released it. Yeah.
Cool. Actually, talking of Blu-rays, the 88 Films release of Nail Gun Massacre was released last week, I think, and we've been sent our review copy, well, our copies, because we did the...
Yeah, you have.
Have you not had yours
yet? I haven't.
I haven't.
Oh, haven't you? Okay.
You haven't, Eric? I got mine today, because that's weird. Yeah. Eric hasn't gotten his.
Mm. Yeah. Okay. Well, if we haven't got it, I'll chase it up. I got mine, about 4 or 5 days ago.
Maybe that's why I got 3 copies.
Could be.
Did it say don't start that one again.
But that's been getting some good reviews, actually. There's a few reviews I've seen. People like the commentary. So if you like the show, then pick up the disc.
One of them posted it to our Facebook and basically reviewed us more than they did the movie. So
yeah, I know. Yeah. And they said you plumbed new depths. So
yeah.
So yes,
that was you learn all that sea gulling.
Yes.
All sorts of, it kind of fits the movie, doesn't it? So that's out. But yeah, sorry, Nathan, is there anything else you've been watching?
No horror movies. The only other thing I watched was Hairspray, but that's not a scary movie.
Okay. Right. Well, was it the one with John Travolta? Or
no.
No. Okay. Well, that's fair. That was scary.
I don't care what anybody says. I mean, nobody can replace Devine
as
Edna Turnblad.
Hmm.
I don't know, Justin would be quite good, I think.
I'm not. No, I think probably you would be, Eric. I think you would need.
Ooh.
What?
Oh.
Ooh.
What?
Ooh, fat man jokes again.
No, Eric. I just thought that you'd have. You could, the way you carry yourself.
It's because Eric's from a timeline where everybody eats poop.
Pardon?
I'll never forget. Yeah. It's a reference Divine. To Pink Flamingos.
Right. Yeah.
I remember, did you ever watch the Incredibly Strange Film Show that Jonathan Ross had in the late 80s?
Yes.
And he interviewed John Waters, and they asked him about that scene, and John Waters was like, I just went up to Divine and said, Divine, would you eat a dog turd? And Divine was like, yeah, sure.
Eric,
that's how I imagine your life to be.
Go ahead.
No, I was just saying that's how I imagine like Justin would be like if he was approached to eat a dog turd. He'd be like, yeah, sure.
I don't think so, Eric. I don't think so. You'd have to pay me a lot of money. But anyway, let's get off the scatological, Eric, and let's come on to you. What have you been
Eric, before you get into your recently seen, have you seen The Number Wang where it's kind of like a slasher movie where the number's like killing somebody?
I don't think I've seen that one, no.
Oh, I saw that.
So the uninitiated, Number Wang is a feature on Mitchell and Webb, their comedy sketch show on BBC.
Yeah, I saw it last night. The guy's laying in a big pool of blood, and one of the numbers is sticking out of his chest, and they're talking about how he was murdered by a bunch of Number Wangs.
Justin, are you a Number Wang fan?
I've never seen it.
Okay.
So, no.
It's an absurdly complex... game show within a TV sketch comedy thing.
So. Okay. Yeah, I know Mitchell and Webb because they did Peep Show, didn't they? But I did try and watch. So I didn't find their sketch show particularly funny, so I didn't watch much of it. Sorry.
I think that deserves a big.
Anyway. No, I'm going for more for that this time.
Yeah. Okay.
So, Eric, what have you been watching apart from...
I watched Cameron Diaz's Box.
Oh, okay.
I watched The Box from 2009. I don't know, do you have a shop over in Bristol called That's Entertainment? Because there was one in St. Helens that, and they were selling off DVDs for 50p, ones that didn't have boxes with them, ironically. Okay. So I picked up The Box actually on Blu-ray. This is Richard Kelly's adaptation of Richard Matheson's short story, which was called Button Button. And Richard Kelly, of course, came to prominence as the director of Donnie Darko, which I never warmed to personally. Then he made something called Southland Tales, which I didn't see, which apparently is pants. And then he made this one. It's set in 1976, and there's a couple played by Cameron Diaz and James Marsden, and they're visited by a bizarre old man who offers them this kind of device. If they press the button within 24 hours, somebody they don't know. I'm sorry, am I boring someone?
Huh?
Mm? He gives them this device. They can, within 24 hours, they have a chance. If they press the button, somebody they don't know will die, and they'll receive $1 million. And then the guy comes back. They do that, obviously. The guy comes back, collects the device, and says he's going to make the offer to somebody else, to somebody they don't know. And that's apparently where the short story ends, and where Richard Kelly's adaptation goes off on its own tangent. And this is where the problems for many people, at the critics at the time who completely slammed it, they were saying that the film is just absurd, and it just goes off on too many bizarre, weird tangents, as if it's, you know, from the director of Exorcist 2, almost. I loved it, I have to say. I thought it was just wonderfully absurd. It was engaging. It was quite eerie and really thought-provoking at times. And, the outlandish nature of the plot, which had most people guffawing or, you know, just disengaged with the film completely, that's what I loved about it. And it reminded me very much of a 2004 film that got lost in the midst of time, and which is ironically called The Forgotten, starring Julianne Moore. Again, a film that sort of came and went without much critical acclaim, which I personally loved. And it has a lot in common with The Box. So as stupid as the film is, and as crap, really crap as some of the CGI is in the film, I was really entertained. And, you know, I was kind of still thinking about the film a few days after watching it. I was really surprised. Again, it was one of those films where you go in with such low expectations that they were, you know, completely superseded. Yes. My favorite Richard Kelly film by far. I don't know if you guys have ever seen it, or were you scared away by the critical mauling it got at the time?
I saw it when it came out, but I don't remember anything about it.
No, I saw it about a couple of years ago, and I don't remember that much about it. I don't remember not liking it, put it that way. Mm. I mean, I like the setting. I remember it looking pretty. It looks
incredibly 70s for, yeah. You know, it. Often you can tell, oh, this is a 2009 film set in 1976, but you could easily be fooled into thinking this was a 1976 film. Mm-hmm. Apart from the crap CGI, of course. Mm. Okay, the other thing I've been watching, I imagine a few of us have seen, is the latest two episodes of Scream Queens. Mm-hmm. And I think it has picked up quite considerably from those first two episodes, which were a bit, we were said that they were too pacey. They're trying to cram too much into the episodes. I think the next, it's still not a masterpiece, but episodes 3 and 4 certainly they're a huge improvement, I thought. It's still not something I'm going to stick with it at the end of the season, but I don't think I'd ever come back and you know, buy the box set when it comes out or anything. But for what it is, it's semi-entertaining. I enjoyed Chanel Oween, which was the opening montage to episode 4. Anyone see that?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
And you know, Jamie Lee Curtis is great to watch, and I mean, it has benefited by slowing down slightly and concentrating on individual characters a bit more. What did you guys think?
I really liked it. I'm a huge fan of the show so far.
You enjoyed the first two episodes as well, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. Mm. The security guard, I love her.
Yeah,
she's my favorite character. Like, I love when she's talking to the one girl that she suspects of being the killer, and she's like, if you're not the killer, why did I find this chainsaw under your bed? And that girl's like, my grandma sent me that chainsaw for protection. And she's like, oh, okay, then you win this round.
I think it's now we know what, it's never going to be scary. It's not even attempting to be scary, is it? It's not attempting to scream. It's just it's basically a comedy with horror elements, which are played for laughs, basically, aren't they? And it's thankfully it's not a scary movie, stupid, but it's I'm enjoying it, but I do find it I still think it's still too hyperactive in some ways for me. I mean, some of the characters, the actors or the actresses mostly say their lines so quickly. It feels like they're reading lines rather than actually acting, if that makes sense. You know, it's kind mm-hmm. of very, it's very stagey, everything, and it's the pace is so quick sometimes it's quite difficult to actually even hear what they're saying. They're just kind of, it's kind of almost like got verbal diarrhea and they're still packing so much in. But having said that, I think, you know, I'm enjoying it. It's an entertaining watch, and Jamie Lee Curtis is not exactly a revelation, because obviously you knew she'd probably be good in this, but the fact is that she's playing a kind of a bitchy kind of role. You know, she does it so well. It's a nice inversion of what she, you know, is best known for, which is kind of playing Laurie Strode in Halloween, who's kind of very kind of geeky and sort of quiet,
ultimately resourceful. But I think from what everything I hear about Jamie Lee Curtis in real life, this probably is a little bit closer to her real personality, isn't it?
I wonder if she has a slasher movie white noise machine to help her go to sleep in reality.
Probably not.
In terms of Scream Queens, I'm enjoying the non-horror elements of it much more than I am when the killer's on screen. When the killer comes on, I'm kind of, you know, a bit bored. I'm enjoying sort of more of the banter between the bitchy characters.
Yeah, I think the killer is just being, it's almost like an afterthought, isn't it?
Completely, yeah.
It's not, and that's, I think that's where it falls down a bit. It's. I mean, I like this episode where they had, you know, the haunted house with all the dead bodies in it. You know, I think that was quite good and quite grisly as well. So I'm going to stick with it definitely. So cool. Was anything else?
No, that was it in terms of horror material. Yeah, I've been watching the new Muppets, which is quite entertaining, I think. But not horror related though. Yeah.
No, I have to catch up on that. I mean, I've not actually really watched very well. I've watched some movies, but no real horror ones recently. So, but what I have been watching is kind of horror TV, I kind of guess, for want of a better term. And that one of them, obviously, was Scream Queens. I also finished. I know no one else here is much of a fan of it, but I was finished Fear the Walking Dead, which has just done its six episode season. It's just closed. It's a very short season. And I enjoyed it. I had its problems. It was a bit, you know, it even had one episode where they had no zombies in it at all, which I thought was obviously quite pointed, but it was a curious choice perhaps for a zombie program, not so many zombies in it. But it kind of, when it got to the crescendo or the close of the season, it did all go hell for leather on for zombie action and stuff. And so I can stick with it for the next season, definitely. So the other thing I started watching, which I know some people have said they've enjoyed in the past, is The Strain, which the Guillermo del Toro vampire TV series. Has any of you guys seen it?
No.
No, not yet. I had it recommended to me, but I don't know. I just haven't had a chance to see it.
Hmm. What about you, Nathan? Have you seen any of those?
No.
No, I mean, it's not, I was kind of put off a little bit because I'm not a massive fan of vampire stuff, but this is more, it's more like a cross between zombie and vampire. And I mean, it's very gory and very fun, I kind of guess, for a better term. It's just kind of, it's an entertaining sort of over-the-top mishmash. It's kind of comic book kind of, but then I think it's based on graphic novels from the director Guillermo del Toro did with somebody else, I think. So it's very, yeah, it's kind of over the top, kind of like almost like a mishmash of aliens and zombies and vampires, kind of comic book violence, and it's quite entertaining. So but that's it been it recently. So shall we move on to the feature presentation?
Yes.
Is that a yes? Okay. Well, here is the trailer for Dario Argento's 1982 giallo, Tenebrae.
I've read all your books, Mr. Neal. The book deals with a murder committed with an old-fashioned open razor, right? This girl, too, was killed with a razor, and your book's pages stuffed into her mouth.
Can I ask you something? If someone is killed with a Smith & Wesson revolver, do you go and interview the president of Smith & Wesson?
Peter, you can't let me down now. We're within 2 days of making a deal. Please, stay just until Friday.
My life is in danger. There's no deal in the world worth risking my life for.
Not anxiety or fear, but freedom. You wrote those words, page 46. Freedom to strike again, Peter.
Listen, don't hang up. We have to talk.
You told me how, Peter Neal. You and me together. We've just begun.
Jesus.
Spy, little spy.
Peter. Oh. Come on, hurry.
Oh, my head.
You'll be okay. Oh. We've got to get out of here. The guy has an axe.
Could it be somebody I know? I wish I'd never written that book.
You don't mean that.
I've made charts. I've tried building a plot the same way you have. Tried to figure it out, but I just have this hunch that something is missing. A tiny piece of the jigsaw. Somebody who should be dead is alive, or somebody who should be alive is already dead.
Explain that.
You know, there's a sentence in a Conan Doyle book. When you have eliminated the impossible, whatever remains, however improbable, must be the truth.
A razor-wielding psycho is stalking the horror writer Peter Neal in Rome to promote his latest work, Tenebrae. But the author isn't the obsessive killer's only target. The beautiful women who surround him are doomed as one by one they fall victim to the murderer's slashing blade. Will fiction and reality blur as fear and madness take hold? Watch in terror as by turns the cast fall victim to the sadistic imagination of Dario Argento, Italy's master of horror. That is some of the background, sorry, the back of box blurb from the recent British Blu-ray of Tenebrae. I watched the film again. I've seen the film many times over the years, but I watched it projected large onto a wall in the Blu-ray on my projector yesterday afternoon. And I love Tenebrae. It's probably I do love a lot of Dario Argento's earlier movies. And some of his later ones are kind of guilty pleasures, but it's such an amazing looking movie. Technically, it's incredible, and I think Dario Argento is pretty much at his full powers with Tenebrae. Technically, there's as with many of these films. I mean, if you watch a lot of Italian films, which I do, then where they arguably fall down is kind of with some of the acting. To British and American audiences, it can be a bit jarring. But if you're a fan of these movies, which I certainly am, then that's part of its charm. Tenebrae is brutal and beautiful, and also very playful as well, because it's kind of a mediation on the contradictions of enjoying violence, watching violence, and being the creator of violence. And it's kind of Dario Argento's kind of answer, I guess, to probably a lot of the criticism he was getting. Certainly at the time, the movie came out in 1982. We've spoken about this before, but there was obviously the big backlash in the United States against films like Dressed to Kill and slasher movies in general. And certainly there was accusations of misogyny and other things. And Dario Argento, you know, famously said, to paraphrase him, he said, "I'd rather watch a beautiful woman die than an ugly woman or a man." So he's in this. He's kind of almost. He's got the Peter Neal character who is writing violent books, but is also justifying the violence in the books to his critics. So again, it works on lots of different levels. It's in its time frame. I mean, Dario Argento helped popularize the giallo internationally in the early 1970s or very late 60s, early 1970s with his animal trilogy. And obviously went on to, you know, it's kind of masterwork like Deep Red. So by this point, giallo were probably pretty much out of fashion in Italy, I would have thought. So I kind of always imagined that this film was partly inspired by the success of the American slasher movie, which, of course, not ironically, but certainly was inspired by the Italian slasher movies, which were the giallo in the early 70s and films like Torso. And so there was a lot of kind of feeding off each other and bouncing ideas across the Atlantic. But yeah, I really like this film. It's not without its flaws, and maybe we'll talk about that in a little bit. But yes, it's one of my favourite Argento movies, and you know, I think it's if you've not seen it, then you really should. So I'll come back to it. But Joseph, what are your thoughts on Tenebrae?
Oh yeah, it's a terrific film. The Peter Neal character is basically an avatar for Dario Argento, because Dario Argento basically, you know, he wrote this and, you know, based on an incident of his real life where he was getting, you know, death threats because of all his violence. And I like that level that's playing there. I also like all the, you know, the sexual aberrations, you know, of gender confusion and all that sordid stuff. Just. I think that fits. It fits well here. The movie's also, you know, very, very, very violent, artistically so. Great cinematography. Lots of good twists, too. I mean, the first time I saw Tenebrae, and I am going to spoil it because that's what we always do. The first time
I haven't watched it, yes.
Yeah. Haha. First time I saw it, I did not guess the killer right, and I'm pretty good at guessing the killer usually, but they definitely threw me for a loop here. And you know, with you know, I was talking about how Dario Argento was talking about how the Peter Neal character is basically his avatar in this film. It kind of makes me wonder, you know, what really goes on inside Dario Argento's mind, but you know, I won't dwell on that too much. Everything you said is pretty much, you know, I'm in agreement with. I love the arm scene where the killer comes through the window and hacks off the woman's arm. I think I even picked that for one of our top three death scenes at one point a long time ago. It's just so well done. Great, you know, special effects. You know, Argento in his prime is just so operatic with violence and making it look beautiful. I have a lot more to say, but a definite thumbs up, probably one of his best movies. It's probably also the start of him, you know, kind of, I guess you'd call it kind of a shifting gears between, a full-fledged giallo and a slasher film. It's kind of right down the middle. It kind of, you know, hovers in that area, but, yeah, definitely thumbs up. Love this film.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you, Joseph. Eric, how about you?
Yeah, I loved it as well, although I don't think it's his best film by quite a distance. I mean, as I said, I do love it. I prefer the animal trilogy from the, you know, Birds of Crystal Plumage, Cat of Nine Tails, Four Flies and Grey Velvet, and my favorite Argento is Deep Red. And even Suspiria and possibly Inferno, I think, are better than Tenebrae. I'm getting down the list now, but Tenebrae is excellent. One of the things I've always found about it, though, is that it seems slightly over-choreographed. And, you know, every shot seems really, really deliberately framed and played out, almost as if it's a Kubrick take on the giallo. And the murder set pieces often feel kind of inorganic and otherworldly. They don't seem to flow naturally. Now, this... that's not necessarily a criticism, because it gives the film a very sort of unique style to it. I mean, the decor is certainly a new backdrop for the giallo. They were quite like the giallo in its heyday in the early 70s. You'd get these awfully, well, not awfully, wonderfully, I should say, tacky, you know, kitschy interiors, and here they're quite futuristic, almost as if they're taken from Kubrick's 2001. You got these absolutely pristine white interiors and modern architecture, and it's so unusual to see that type of backdrop for a giallo, and again gives it this unique style. And it's ironic that the film's that Tenebrae, the word, translates into English as darkness when the film is so bright. You know, even the murders that were happening at night are so, you know, brightly lit. And again, Argento he's created something really unique within the genre, and he has to be applauded for that. I mean, the gore is plentiful in this, and I can see why it became sort of a video nasty in the UK and Ireland back in the day. That woman who gets her arm chopped off and sprayed all over the wall is so incredibly over the top. I mean, Argento's earlier giallo always had some bizarre over-the-top elements. If you think back to Four Flies and Grey Velvet and the whole concept of the retina retaining the last image that the dead person sees, that's more believable than some of the stuff that's in Tenebrae, which, you know, Argento's always said is more grounded, is his most grounded in reality thriller that he's done. I also adore Goblin's music in this. I didn't realize this, but I was doing some research and found that some of the people who worked in Goblin were also disco producers, which hence is why the music is kind of this, I wouldn't call it disco, it's kind of electro pop. It's very early 80s, but I think it still sounds fresh and interesting today. I think it's possibly our Goblin's best score, even better than the classics they produced for Suspiria and Deep Red. Yeah, and as you're saying, I like the semi-autobiographical nature of the plot about, you know, the artist being criticized for inciting violence amongst his, his readers. And then, you know, something Argento has been accused of many times. And I like the idea of, again, this is a spoiler, of art eventually killing the killer at the end as well. I mean, that ending is pretty darn spectacular, I have to say. And, you know, death by modern art is something I can relate to, because I was once taken around the Tate Modern in London and I almost died of boredom as I looked at jam rags hanging from trees and a small pile of stones in a big white room, and was told it was something profound and interesting when all I wanted to do was, you know, go to the local bear bar and have a few vodka and tonics. Yes, a huge, huge, huge thumbs up for Tenebrae. I don't think it's one of Argento's best. I do think it's better than Dracula 3D. This is probably him at his peak. Although I did like Phenomena in Opera, I think this is his last outstanding film for me.
Mm. Thank you, Eric. What about you, Nathan?
Well, first I got to say that I'm a little nervous because I didn't realize that, you know, I'm actually sitting right next to a window and all the walls in this room are white.
Are you married to Silvio Berlusconi?
I think I'm going to be okay just from that one. And I don't have a gun.
You better watch out for a big chopper.
No, I think Tenebrae is excellent.
Don't worry. Everyone around there is armless.
Oh, Eric. Armless. Is that your joke?
That's not even my, joke. No, but it could be. It's so good.
Tenebrae is great. I agree with a lot of what you guys have already said. It's, you know, it's definitely one of Argento's best. It's like Eric. It's not my favorite of his. My favorite is always going to be Opera, because I love that film. But Tenebrae is a really good example of, you know, a very entertaining giallo. Obviously, the standout scene for me is, of course, the arm scene, because it's crazy to watch this arm pumping all this blood, or the stub, actually, pumping all this blood all over this bright white wall. It's very, I don't know, it's very artistic, as we've said. And the ending, 100%, I love the ending. It's so, I don't know, chaotic, I guess. For lack of a better word, I love the way it all goes down. It's probably one of my favorite final scenes in a giallo, I think, because I think the way they handled it was really, really well. It was an excellent job on that. I don't have a whole lot to add, because you kind of covered what I'd written down on my notes here. But yes, very artistic, and Argento is definitely one of the directors that, you know, can make all the death scenes, you know, very artful, and I really appreciate that. I think he's a very, very good director. He's probably one of my favorite directors, actually, and I'm not even a huge fan of giallos to begin with. But I will say that for the most part, I find giallos to be extremely creepy, even Strip Nude for Your Killer. I know it's not Argento, but I even find it kind of creepy.
Seriously?
I'm serious. But you're talking to a guy that finds the killer in Slumber Party Massacre 2 to be scary.
Well, do you know what I have to say to that? What? The only thing I can say to that is, you are a female.
Oh, yeah? Do you know that I could, like, dress up like one and go on a killing spree at a villa?
Well, do you know what I think is the weird thing about Tenebrae is, like, a transsexual once stuck a stiletto heel in my mouth once, and I turned out okay. Wibble, wibble.
Oh, and I also meant to say that this is the one of the only times that I've guessed the killer correctly in a film.
Really?
Because usually I'm awful at guessing killers. I didn't guess the killer in Deep Red, Bird with a Crystal Plumage. I mean, I'm awful at guessing the killers, but I don't know if somehow I got this one, which was odd for me.
It threw me for a loop because, you know, they're setting him up to be the hero of the piece, and typically Argento films are centered around a male, like a pianist or an author or, you know, some form of a male hero. So I'm like, here we go again. So they definitely threw me for a loop on this one.
Well, what he also does is that he sets the first murder whilst Peter Neal is on board a flight from New York to Rome, so that you think from the start it can't be him.
Mm. Right, right.
Because, yeah. Of course, there is the double killer thing right. going on there.
Well, I think it's, yeah, absolutely. I think it's, you know, when you see that guy the first time, you know, it's something pings in your head, doesn't it? Because he's kind of, you know, he's quite creepy, isn't he? There's something about him. He's kind of like really skinny, kind of slightly kind of mad-eyed looking. Was he a sort of a TV presenter?
Are you describing yourself or are you describing John Steiner?
Oh, very funny. So he's making thin jokes.
Sorry?
Thinnest.
Yeah. But you are skinny and you do have mad eyes and you probably kill people.
Well, yeah, that's all true, but not really, obviously. but yeah, no, it's, you know, because when I first watched it, I'm trying to think when I first watched this, because this obviously was, we'll talk a little bit about the background, but this is obviously one of the infamous video nasties in the United Kingdom. So I can't remember when I first saw it, but obviously when you do watch it for the first time, you are thrown for a loop, because like you say, it couldn't be, you know, the killer couldn't be the main character to start off with. And also you're not really sure whether or not he's is crazy all the way through, or he becomes crazy at some point, you know, during the film. Obviously he has that those flashback scenes with the transsexual Eva Robbins, but whether or not he's always been mad, or it doesn't, I don't think Argento is particularly interested in that, actually. I think it's I think sometimes critics of Argento often would say that it's style over substance. And I think sometimes that can be true with some of his films. So I don't think he probably thought that through. I mean, one of the areas where the film not falls down for me, but I think is probably a bit lazy on Argento's, you know, that whole plotting for a film that's so intricately plotted and has all these twists and turns, is the scene's fantastic, but where the Laura Wendell ends up at the killer's house after being chased by a dog. It's just too much coincidence, isn't it? There's no reason.
It is. It's very, for fuck's sake. Yeah.
Yeah, because it's kind of like, we know she knows the, you know, she's the daughter of the person who's letting the house to Peter Neal's character. And she just ends, she gets a you know, did you spot that's Michelle Suave, the person who's driving the motorcycle, and she has an argument with him, which is obviously the director of Stage Fright and Delamore, but she ends up getting chased by a dog after having an argument, and then ends up in the killer's house and finds all the photos of the dead people or dead women, and it's just too coincidental. It's just not, you know, something like that wouldn't happen in reality. But I can, again, Dario Argento's not particularly concerned with that. I think it's it leads to a very iconic scene, and I think it, you know, I think it was Joseph who was saying about how everything's so brightly lit, or was it you, Eric? But it's that.
It was
kind
me.
Of,
yeah.
It was, yeah. So and that great chase scene through the woods, and the killer kills her, and then literally in the field next door to his house, and then leaves her body there and doesn't even attempt to conceal it. So it's, yep, kind of all these things which wouldn't make sense in a traditional thriller, like an American thriller. You wouldn't really get that. People would people would read the script and go, hold on a minute, we need to sort this out, because obviously the character wouldn't do that. But again, it's not really what the Giallo are about. It's about the spectacle. I mean, yeah, there's so many great scenes in there, and obviously one of the probably the most iconic scene is the one with the two women in the house with the camera work, the camera going over on the crane and peering into windows and going over the roof and back down again with that kind of thumping Goblin soundtrack, which is quite spectacular, isn't it? And it never fails to amaze, really. I think it's also interesting that sort of like people have stolen stuff from his films. Certainly, the Brian De Palma lifted that scene at the end where Peter Neal is standing behind the detective, and when the detective bends down, the killer's behind him, and that was lifted for Raising Cain, and it's been in quite a few movies since. So I think it's, you know, he's a very influential director. Is there anything else?
Yeah, as you say, there's a lot of coincidence in this movie, but that's par for the course with Giallo. There's, you know, there's just tons of contrivances in, you know, going back to the 70s in the classic era, there was contrivances. You just have to, you know, go with it.
And Eric was talking about all the architecture, how everything's, white. I bet the gaffer on this film had a hell of a time keeping the glare off the walls.
Yeah, I bet. I mean, it's also going to say about the whole gender politics thing within it. I'm not going to get too film student-y about it, but it's kind of interesting the roles for women in the film, that you've obviously got his Darren Accoldy, his wife or soon to be ex-wife, I kind of guess, is the kind of grounded character, isn't she? She plays his secretary, but all the other women in the film, it's almost like stereotypes. You've got like the lesbian feminist and her girlfriend, seemed to have an enormous amount of difficulty keeping her nipples hidden.
She did
throughout the film. But then you had
that wasn't just an off the shoulder number she was wearing; it was an off the boob as well.
It was. It's probably the most revealing dress I've ever seen. But also then you had the completely ineffectual female detective as well, didn't you? She was, completely superfluous to the action apart from to get killed at the end. So it was kind of a curious sort of, like you say, you probably don't really necessarily want to get into Dario Argento's head particularly, because I think he's possibly, a complex character, I think, is probably, to be said.
Yeah, I can barely hear you, Justin, at this stage.
Hearing a cat purr.
Yeah.
Is that cat purring?
Yeah, it's a fatty tuna belly.
Okay. It's always good to have a cat in. Unfortunately, Argento's not with us today. The cat, that is. He's still with us, but he's not with me today. So I have to obviously keep him out, although obviously I was tempted to get him in for the discussion of Dario Argento.
That would have been perfect for him.
It would have been.
It would have been perfect.
Perfect.
That's not even my joke of the week either.
God. Scraps is here. She's been quiet though. Good kitty.
You need to get down, like right now.
Pardon?
I'm talking to my cat.
Okay. I thought you might have someone else there with you. So, anything else we want to say about...
I want to say, the Hysteria Continuous is a sexist podcast. Why do you hate Eric so much? You cheap little hooker. You make me sick.
Oh, Eric. We could use that as a little trailer, couldn't we?
I'm going to cut off Eric's arm.
I've always wondered what... It was
chocolate will pour out of the wound.
I haven't had any chocolate for weeks.
Have you not?
No, I've lost a stone and a half.
Have you?
Uh-huh. Yes, I have.
Oh, well done.
I'm waif-like now.
What's that, 21 pounds?
Are you going to be like an otter?
No, I'm still very much a bear.
Okay.
I'm going to plateau soon, and then I'll be happy. But I was going to say before you made that chocolate jibe, I still wear brown lipstick, by the way, I was wondering what the point of was of casting a transsexual in the flashback sequence was. I mean, it has no payoff, really. It could have been a woman rather than a transsexual. Mm-hmm. It made no difference. Were you able to find any information on that, Justin? Because I couldn't find anything.
No, I just think he was. I think. Well, you see, Argento's not a homophobe by any stretch. I mean, in fact, he wanted to. He featured kind of gay characters in some of his other films, didn't he? He had a gay detective in, I think it's Four Flies and Grey Velvet. I think it's the character in that just happens to be gay, and also there's kind of gay characters in Deep Red. And apparently, he wanted to make a giallo, an all gay giallo. Of all gay characters at some point, but you couldn't get the funding for it.
A gay allo,
exactly. So I don't think he's that. But obviously, the whole thing was about perversion. You know, I'm using in inverted commas. But so he was kind of, maybe that's why he did that, because he wanted to add an extra layer of, you know, into it. I don't know. It's curious, and whether or not the character was even meant to be. Transsexual, as in, you know, but again, I think it's probably just appealed to him as an odd thing to do, rather than necessarily thinking it through, perhaps.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of, you know, it's curious. I mean, Argento, again, is complex and contradictory in a lot of ways, because he is actually, in real life, you know, he's a vegetarian and a pacifist, but he makes incredibly violent movies, and so there is that contradiction with him, but I kind of guess that's partly why people find him and his films possibly so fascinating.
Yeah, because he does like putting weird people into his films, because he puts some goths into Mother of Tears.
Well, nothing weird about that, Eric.
If you say so.
Well, I think
go back to the graveyard, goths. Nobody wants you here.
See, goth shaming, Eric.
Yeah.
You see, you're just shaming, you're thin shaming, goth shaming. It's just endless bullying with you, isn't it?
I've got gothophobia.
Have you?
Yes. I'm a gothophobe.
Are you? Well, we know that, Eric. We know that, Eric. So,
are there still goths around now, or are they emo now?
I don't think there's emos
Stop
anymore.
Stop it. Sorry, my cat's trying to make pancakes on my leg, and her claws are digging into my leg.
Pancakes? What, like poo?
No, like, you know how they need stuff with their paws.
Mm. I thought you meant like Boston pancakes,
or make biscuits, or whatever they call it, something like that.
But yeah, there's nothing worse than that sharp pain of a cat putting their claws into your lap as they settle down, is there?
Yeah.
I don't know. I had a gallbladder that exploded once, and it was quite painful.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah.
You put,
I would rather have had a cat on my lap.
Well, fair enough. Well, let's talk a little bit about background, shall we? What's this film? Who would like to go first? Well, actually, before anyone, I found something out about. I just wonder if any of you knew, because I always knew that Daria Nicoldi was not the first choice. She wasn't meant. She was meant to play a different character in the film. And there was an American actress who was going to play that character. Do you know who that was?
No, but I was intrigued, and I knew this story, but I didn't know who the identity of the actress was.
Well, yeah, because I thought it was always odd, because every time I saw it mentioned, it always just said the American actress who left, but it didn't say who it was. And I thought, well, that's a bit odd. Why didn't they name this American actress? But I went back through the Variety archives and the casting. It was actually going to be Mimsy Farmer.
Really? Was, all right.
And for some, it didn't say why she wasn't in the film, but she was cast in the film, presumably in that character role. But she left the production before it started, and obviously she was in Four Flies on Grey Velvet, wasn't she? With Argento's earlier film, and also she was in, you know, she was still acting in the mid 80s, because she did Body Count of the Ruggero Deodato.
Yeah, she was in Bill Cheats the Black Cat just around the same time as Tenebrae.
Yeah, so I don't know what the reason why she wasn't in it, but I was always curious about who it was, but he has, Argento has a, not a habit, but he's a bit of a reputation, doesn't he? I think he's not an one of the Redgrave sisters was supposed to be in opera, wasn't she? And she walked out on the film. She's going to play the diva at the beginning of the film, I believe, and she left, and that's why it's kind of that was shot in that way. So I don't know what the gossip is behind all of that, but I just thought it was interesting that Mimsy Farmer was meant to be in the film, and I wonder what it would have been like if she had been. But anyway, sorry. Eric, do you want to... Would you like to give some feedback?
Yes, okay. Well, apparently the script was inspired by a real-life incident where an Uber fan of Suspiria had threatened to kill Argento. So this is the idea of a sort of art inspiring violence. The film was shot in 10 weeks, starting on May the 3rd, 1982. There's a possibility its original title was Under the Eyes of the Assassin, but it's more commonly known as Tenebrae, obviously, and then released in the States in 1987, which is quite late, as Unsane, which isn't even a real word, apparently. Mm-hmm. Veronica Lario, who plays Jane, who gets her arm chopped off and spray paints the walls of the kitchen red, it was married to Silvio Berlusconi. So she probably had her arse black and blue from being pinched. They divorced in February of 2014. Anthony Franciosa, the lead actor, he was once married to Shelley Winters. In the late 50s. Laura Wendell plays Maria. She went on to be in lots of film Mirage films, including things like Zombie 5, Killing Birds, and Ghost House, one of my favourites. She was also a child actress in the 70s and had been in giallos like My Dear Killer and Perfume of the Lady in Black. Her real name actually is Daniela Barnes, and her father was also a famous actor. Well, not famous to me, but he was in tons and tons of classic era Disney movies. Eva Robbins, the transsexual who is in the flashback sequences, she was born Roberto Coti in 1958, and she went on the following year to appear in the two Hercules movies directed by Luigi Cozzi. The Peter Walken part was originally intended for Christopher Walken, so it would have been interesting to see him in the role.
Hmm? Sorry, Eric, do you say Peter Walken? Do you mean the Peter Neal?
Peter Neal, sorry. Yep. Was originally intended for Christopher Walken. Oops, my mistake, sorry. And Teresa Russell dubs the voice of Daria Nicolodi.
I can imagine, I don't find this sexist at all, doing a Christopher Walken. Yes. Bad Christopher Walken, sorry.
Teresa Russell, who was a famous actress at the time, and this is unusual, she dubs the voice of Daria Nicolodi in the film, in the English language version. Of course, she's most famous for starring in the life story of Justin Kurzweil, which was Ken Russell's 1991 film, Whore.
Oh, Eric.
Did she do a good portrayal of you, Justin?
It was fantastic, yes. I was very pleased with that.
Okay. Michele Suavi was the assistant director, and he appears twice in the film, actually. He's in one of the flashback sequences as well with Eva Robbins, as well as the boyfriend on the motorbike. When it was released in the UK, even prior to it being branded a video nasty, there was trouble with the film poster, which was a depiction of the scene with the woman with her head back and her throat slit. I think it's one of the lesbian characters in the film. So in the UK, instead of the blood dripping from her throat, there was a red ribbon tied around her neck instead to make it more palatable for the UK audiences. And apparently, according to Kim Newman on one of the commentary tracks on the UK Blu-ray, the quote that's attributed to Hound of the Baskervilles actually comes from Arthur Conan Doyle's The Sign of Four. So that was a bit of a glaring error by Argento. Mm-hmm. I think we can let him away with it, though. I think that's all I have, Justin.
Okay, well, thank you, Eric. Joseph, have you got anything for us?
Joseph, hello?
Joseph?
Sorry, my mute button was on. Okay. No, the only thing I had was the Unsane release in the United States was severely cut of just about all of its violence. And as I mentioned in my little review, and Eric covered in his, that... Argento based this off of a real-life incident, but that's all I had.
Cool. Okay, thank you, Joseph. What about you, Nathan? Have you got anything for us?
No.
Okay. I think, Eric, you covered a lot of it. I'm just having a quick look to see if there's anything else. John Steiner was in Mario Bava's last film, Shock, with Daria Nicolodi. I think Daria Nicolodi, as is mentioned, was married to Dario Argento, and their daughter Asia Argento was in quite a lot of Argento's movies, and obviously he's...
I think it's pronounced Arzia.
Arzia, sorry. I think they were just about to break up, apparently, during the filming. They were having... apparently they were still having arguments about the... arguments about the credits in Suspiria. Because the whole thing was based on stories that Darren Accordi's grandmother had told her about her time at school in Germany, I believe. But Argento was very dismissive about her role in this, which is why apparently she didn't really want... She was going to play the kind of Peter Neal's wife, which obviously the arm-chopping role, so she would have had a much smaller role in this. I mean, it's actually one of the few films that Argento doesn't kill her in. Well, the later ones anyway, because she obviously gets that spectacular scene in opera where she gets shot through the keyhole, not keyhole, the spy hole in the door.
I think she gets killed spectacularly in Phenomena as well.
Yes,
if I recall, yeah,
by the monkey. But this one, I mean, arguably she's kind of like she not the worst of it, but she ends the film screaming her head off, doesn't she? All the way for what seems like the last 5 minutes. So. Although she's literally the last person standing, she's possibly, is completely comes off it completely damaged. The film was a very big success in Italy, relatively big success. So it showed that Argento hadn't lost his touch at kind of making money. I mean, arguably, I'd say that this was his last great movie, as in everything after this was. I mean, although I do like opera and Phenomena. Especially Phenomena, I think that's looking back on it, it's a great movie. Opera hasn't stood up the test of time for me as much as last time I watched it, and everything beyond that, I think he just started to lose his touch really. But I think with Tenebrae, he was still very much at the top of his game. As we mentioned, it got banned in the UK. It did get a cinema release in the UK, shorn of a few about 5 seconds of violence. But yeah, it fell foul of the Video Nasty hysteria, which of course only increased its kind of value or kind of notoriety in this country. Let's see if there's anything else actually. I think that's probably. I mean, there's some very good books written on Argento. Alan Jones' one is very good. And there's I can't remember who's there's another one I've got as well. So
Maitland McDonough. That one?
Yes, there's that one, and also there was a different one. There was one. There was the Fab Press one, which I think may have been the Alan Jones one, but there was another one, and I can't remember who wrote it. Anyway, there's a wealth of information out there on Dario Argento, and obviously, just mentioned John Saxon who was in this as well, who was in, if you're looking at Slasher Links, he was in the Black Christmas, as well as actually being in one of the very first Jalli, which was the... arguably the very first Jalli, which is Mary Barber's The Girl Who Saw Too Much, or is it The Girl
Who Knew Too Much? Was it? Yeah, much. I think so. Yeah. It was also a Nightmare on Elm Street.
Of course, yes. So,
was she the one that turns into the cockroach?
Yes. Do you think it had? It was inspired by slasher movies. Do you think there was a kind of? Because obviously Argento had also been in America in the, this comes hot on the heels of, Inferno, which is one of his best films, but is kind of almost.
Well, I think it is his best film,
But it's very different, isn't it? I mean, it's kind of this Tenebrae is a kind of a populist movie, isn't it? It's made as a thriller, whereas. Inferno was very much kind of approaching art house, wasn't it?
I think the gore in Tenebrae is certainly Friday the 13th esque. Plotting wise, I think it's still firmly a giallo, though.
Like I said, I feel like it's kind of middle ground. His earlier work was kind of surreal and otherworldly, and this one's kind of is that, but it's like you said, it's more grounded. And then, after that, the rest of his films were fairly grounded, almost. I wouldn't call Phenomena fairly grounded, but it's kind of a middle ground. It reminds me a little bit of Stage Fright in a way. Yeah. Just in its kind of a just real life approach, I guess you'd call it.
Well, it's interesting that Michele Soavi was, he obviously learned his craft with Argento on this film and other. He's in other early 80s films, wasn't he? He's in Absurd briefly. Yeah. And I could never understand why the film was released in America as Unsane with all the violence cut out, or most of it cut out. It just didn't seem, it seemed like whoever, it's like buying a porno and then cutting all the sex out. It just seems bizarre, isn't it? If you're going to release a film especially as somebody who's known for this type of work, it's kind of a kind of curious thing, which is, you know, obviously why the film possibly hasn't got a wider following until more recently in the States, because certainly it was kind of, it was reviewed very badly in the United States, because it was, I mean, that Dario Argento films quite often are pretty incoherent at the best of times, you know, sometimes with plotting and things not necessarily making sense. If you start hacking them to pieces, it's going to make even less sense. So,
well, whoever released that was insane.
Exactly.
For cutting all the violets out.
Very Justin, clever.
Hmm. Oh, thank you. Justin, what is your favorite Argento film? Because me, Eric, and Joseph have said our favorites.
Well, I think it's always, will always be Suspiria.
So we all have a different favorite Argento film.
Yeah.
Kind of neat.
Mm. I mean, I love...
Well, he had such a good back catalogue that it's quite possible we all have different.
I do. I mean, I love Inferno as well, but I think Suspiria just has the edge on it, on all his films. So, we've discussed this about whether or not Suspiria has, I mean, it definitely has the giallo elements in it. So, anything else we'd like to say on Inferno before we go on to, not Inferno, Tenebrae, before we go on to Eric's Joke of the Week? Well, let's hope it's
I'm ready for Eric's Joke of the Week.
I just want to say to all of our female listeners, you can stick a stiletto in my mouth.
Well, that's an invitation. So if you would like to, write in. Because let's say, actually, I'll just play the how to get in touch with the show. If I can find it, and I don't know. Oh, here we go. Just so, write in, all the female listeners and any transsexuals out there who'd like to stick it in Joseph's mouth. This is how to get in contact with us.
Be sure to search for and like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at THC_podcast. Our voicemail is 858-233-9281. And you can email us directly at the.hysteria.continues@gmail.com.
Okay, and Eric, are you ready to impress
us? I am ready, yes.
Here we go.
You will be impressed.
It's my joke of the week. It's so, so fantastic.
What do you call a woman with a huge arse who sings pop songs and goes around killing people with black gloves? J-Lo. You're welcome, everyone. What? J-Lo. Did you not understand the joke?
I thought it was going to be a Susie kind of joke.
Sounds like J-Lo. But that took me all night to come up with that one.
And thank you for listening to The Hysteria Continues. We'll be back next time. Oh, Eric. Are you crying?
Yeah. It's so mean.
Oh, Eric. Well, what can we do to make you feel better?
Well, why don't you read out what the listeners were saying about Tenebrae on our Facebook page? Okay. It might cheer me up.
Joseph, have you got that to hand?
Yeah, just let's see what everyone's saying here. Do. Okay. Sean Gamble wants to know if this will be available today on September 27th. Apparently not. Mike Alishan, who picked the episode, says, Tenebrae is one of my favorite movies of all time. Safe to say it's in my top 15, and that includes every genre. The music is masterful. The camera work is brilliant. The cinematography is gorgeous. And the ending with horror legend Daria Nicolodi screaming repeatedly at the top of her lungs is powerfully moving. Pop quiz. What do you get when you combine Tenebrae with the epic Hysteria Lives podcast? Answer, Hysteria Heaven.
Oh, thank you.
That's from Mike Alishan. Let's see who else. Ooh, we got quite a few of them here. Bob Hartshorn says, not my favorite Argento. That would be a fight between Deep Red, Suspiria, and Opera, but has its moments with the excellent soundtrack. That beautifully bloody severed arm, and John Saxon in a trilby doing a mini jig around Tony Franciosa being amongst the best of them. P.S. is an opera podcast in the pipeline. And I can't believe we didn't mention John Saxon in our.
We did.
We did?
Well, I must have about him being in Black Christmas. And
I must have dozed off. Sorry. Ara Alishan says, Tenebrae happens to be the first giallo I ever encountered and set the bar rather high for what has since become one of my favorite subgenres. This film introduced me to Goblin as well as Dario Argento, and for that, it will always hold a special place in my heart. Let's see here. Miles Hamer says, astonishing slice of Euro sleaze. Certainly one of his more streamlined and logical narratives, which must contribute to its critical standing, though I prefer Argento's crazy and the ball bag lunacy such as Deep Red, Inferno, Opera, Phenomena, et al. Still a great and grimy, bold work. Let's see. Spencer Hayfron, he says, in Rome, listening to the Deep Red Eyeball podcast and picked these beauties up. Watching Argento in Roma is hysteria heaven. And that's not so much about Tenebrae, but okay. Brad Yasuda says, the impulse had become irresistible. There was only one answer to the fury that tortured him. And I think he's quoting the movie, so you know how that goes. Tom Virtuoso says, Tenebrae is full of so many operatic sequences that are so well filmed and beautiful to look at that it's sometimes really difficult to stick with the storyline. Which is not necessarily a bad thing, considering each individual murder setup is pretty much a standalone study of overdramatic women, fascinating locations that I wish I could afford, and some insanely over-the-top synth music. Anytime I go running and I see an unleashed dog, it will always remind me of the totally random Doberman chase sequence. Also, there's a regular at the club here that looks like a prostitute right out of Tenebrae, and I call her Argento Tranny. Rude, but totally fitting. Let's see. John Jordan says, my favorite Argento film. It's brutally violent, yet beautifully filmed, with the crane shot that travels alongside the house. Being a highlight for me. The score is absolutely amazing, and the finale is tense and shocking with its sudden bloody violence. And Brad Yasuda writes in again, I remember seeing it as Unsane on VHS. I was wondering how Jane lost her arm in that cut. When I saw the film uncut, it went from being meh to amazing. Also, I disagree with Dario Argento and Claudio Simonetti about the use of Kim Wilde's song Take Me Tonight being used over the end credits. I liked it, but can see their point. Let's see. Matt Minter says, the early 80s fashion, sunny locations, and electronic score make me think of this film as Dario doing a really messed up episode of Miami Vice. I can see that. Overall, I like his use of sunshine and bright colors throughout the film. It was a bold change of pace after Suspiria and Inferno, and somehow enhances the sleaziness of the pick. Richard Marr Griffin says, a masterpiece of cinema, visually stunning. Mitch King says, one of my least favorite Argento films. Not that it's bad, it just lacks something for me. Perhaps the atmosphere is nowhere near Suspiria or Phenomena. Lucas Garges says, brilliant giallo, Argento at the top of his game. Our good friend Johnny Krug says, amazing flick. I have a Tenebrae tattoo. Jack Castillo says, my favorite Argento, my favorite giallo. Rob Wilson says, I love Tenebrae. The music and camera work are amazing. Justin Cook, or Kosh, I can never pronounce his name right. I call Phenomena my gateway drug, the one that led me to seek out all things Italian and Dario related. In that sense, I call Tenebrae my heroine. First time I saw it, I wanted to feel this way for the rest of my life. 16 years later, I'm still chasing the dragon. Zoe Wall says, love Tenebrae. What an absolute cracker. Scott Pliskin says, I feel bad for that store security guy. He went over to the shoplifter's place to get some action, but found her dead instead. Speaking of which, if that guy would have been gay, she'd still be alive today. Okay. Mikey Faulkner says, I finally saw this just a few months ago. It is genius. I was particularly taken with Gianni and his impossibly tight jeans. On a more serious note, I think it would have been my favorite Argento movie if I hadn't known the plot twist in advance. And finally, Hayden Watkins says, terrible film.
Ooh. We know Hayden is joking, because Hayden is the...
Oh, is he?
Well, I presume so, because he's the co-author of the upcoming 80 years of slasher movies. I can't remember the exact name, but he and his partner in crime have been watching slasher movies from around the world and doing a massive book on them. which I'm very much looking forward to seeing, and I'm sure we'll hear some more. In fact, actually, it might be worth getting them on the show at some point to have a chat about that. So if you're listening, Hayden. But thanks to everyone for the feedback. It's interesting because sometimes when we post and ask for feedback on films, and sometimes we, you know, especially some of the more, shall we say, curious choices from our listeners.
Nathan's choices, you mean?
Nathan's choices. So, no, actually, to be fair to Nathan, a lot of, you know, you do get people talking, but but you know, this one obviously strikes a chord with a lot of people. So it's been, you know, I was looking for an excuse to watch it on the big screen. The new Blu-ray, and so I'm really glad I've reacquainted myself with Tenebrae. So it's a film I can watch over and over without getting bored of it. So all good. But as I mentioned before, we have got feedback from people. So, we are doing two shows today, so we're going to save the feedback for the next episode, which, if everything goes according to plan, Joseph, do you want to tell us what we are going to be covering next time?
Our next episode will be Halloween H2O.
Yes, Halloween.
The return, water. The return of Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yes, which is quite fitting for, obviously, with Scream Queens, we'll probably still be on the air when we talk about that. So that we'll be back for Halloween for that show. We shall look forward to that. So thank you for listening. And we'll play out with some more music from Tenebrae. And we'll catch you next time. So thanks for listening. Say goodbye to the good people.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Adios.
Has Joseph just come? Well, it wouldn't be a podcast without some animal noises in the background, would it?
No.
Right.
Or a bit of this.
Oh, Rick.
Oh no. Can't take me anywhere.
That's not a spider, it's a cockroach.
I'm back.
I'm front. That's my joke of the week. It's so chic and fantastic. Eric, that is the ultimate breakdown. The ultimate Inga breakdown.